We started with data at our core. So we can probably claim to be one of the first data companies in the world. And over a period of time, data became databases. Ultimately, marketing is about three things: building the brand and awareness. Second is to create that demand. And third is to improve brand salience. Every marketer ultimately grows more mature and realizes that while you can be a specialist as far as your expertise is concerned, your marketing plans cannot be one-dimensional,
right?
Focusing only on digital, or for that matter, focusing only, say, on
offline,
ATL or offline.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to yet another episode of The Growth Genius, where we bring growth stories in business and marketing, powered by Infidigit, the SEO experts. In today's episode, we have a growth genius who is a seasoned professional and whose career has transitioned across banking, financial services, and now information services. Please join me in welcoming Mr. Vipul Oberoi, Director of Marketing, CSR, and Learning Solutions at Dun & Bradstreet. Vipul, pleasure to have you on The Growth Genius. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Mehul. Thanks for having me on Growth Genius.
This pleasure is ours. So I would like to start with your role at Dun & Bradstreet. You know, your role comprises of multiple things. So can you explain that a bit to us?
Sure. So I'll start with Dun & Bradstreet. Yeah. We were founded in 1841. And that's like almost 180 years ago. And try to imagine that world, which was so different, where India hadn't fought its first war of independence. And secondly, that Hong Kong was a fishing village of just about 6,000 people. The electric bulb wasn't invented yet. Even something like a barbed wire wasn't invented yet. So we are talking about those times. And since those times, Louis Tappan, who was our founder, he started collecting data on companies. So he realized that company information is very important, because the telephone wasn't invented yet. So means of communication were almost non-existent.
Right.
So he decided to collect information on businesses across America. And that is how it started. We started with data at our core. So we can probably claim to be one of the first data companies in the world. And over a period of time, data became databases. With databases came more meaningful information. It was enriched to become from just firmographics to including all kinds of information about companies. In 1964, we also started with our own proprietary numbering system, which is called DUNS.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a unique identifier for every company and every location of that company, every office across the world. So across the world, I can say that we have currently crossed about 500 million such DUNS numbers. So that is the size of the record that we have. So from databases, but when we have more information leads to analytics leads to insights. And over a period of time, we have helped banks in making better credit decisions, corporates making better decisions for their own finances, on vendor assessment, assessing risk in their supply chain, for marketing domains to do intelligent prospecting, to do better outreach with their clients and prospects. And overall, if you see, and this also includes, of course, a part of advisory services that we do
true,
in India.
True.
All that has data as its base. So these data blocks eventually have led to that information and insights, which is the bread and butter of the company. So coming to my profile there, if you now we would see that understand that this is all B2B information.
Okay.
We have information on companies and the people who are the key decision makers in those companies. One of my primary jobs in any B2B marketing actually is also to build the brand. Ultimately, marketing is about three things: building the brand and awareness. Second is to create that demand. And third is to improve brand salience. And these three apply to my role as well. And in the marketing domain, I have to first build the brand. I have to build the thought leadership, because this is a decision not of an individual when it comes to whether to go with Dun & Bradstreet or not.
Right.
There the decision is taken jointly by several people, and everybody puts their own job, their own career, their own bonuses online when they have to take such important decisions on which company to go with when it comes to their risk assessment or prospecting, etc. So my job also is to first give them that assurance that Dun & Bradstreet is that brand that they should go with. They wouldn't be fired from their job if they decide to go with Dun & Bradstreet. Second part is demand generation. Of course, we do a lot of outreach activities like anybody would do, but these are not mass outreach activities. Mm-hmm. These are not ATL activities like in mass media or, for example, doing large-scale activations on ground. It does not happen this way, because here we are trying to convince a senior key functionary in an organization, mm-hmm. on what will be the implications of the challenges they are facing. We are telling them about how Dun & Bradstreet can step in and help them, and we are also telling them about the various possibilities beyond challenges, what are the opportunities that they can exploit. So all this cannot happen through purely non-personal communication. There is a lot of connects which are built, and one of my jobs is to build those connects. And of course, I'm not talking about the brand salience. That is, of course, a function of what we do. But over a period of time, as far as marketing is concerned, digital marketing has become very important for us. And I would like to stress here that while performance marketing is something which is important for us, it's a pure demand generation. We do not take that route of getting pure leads and working on those. Our objective is to first create that pull. So when we create a brand, we create a pull, and when we do our own digital marketing activities, our first objective is to get that organic growth.
Right.
And again, the cornerstone of this organic growth is our website. A website is a repository of information. Whenever a client faces any problem, they typically come on Google. They search for what their problem is, who can solve it. So search becomes important, SEO becomes important for us. When they land on our website, they need to have that information given to them in those clear ways, because our products are not easy to understand.
Right.
Ultimately, what we are talking to them is how data is being converted to insights. We have a range of SaaS based products, which are, of course, something which a concept which has to be explained. We are talking about advisory.
Yes.
So the content on the website, the structure, the navigation, all that becomes extremely important. So that, and of course, there is PR. There's a lot of media coverage that we try to generate, and that helps us in our thought leadership. That also communicates what kind of products that we have, what is the expertise that we have. And the fourth pillar is social media marketing,
right.
More specifically LinkedIn. It's not just really about having products or trying to do employer branding. It's also to create that kind of thought leadership on this platform. Besides this, we have this learning solution business, which I also head. And our learning solutions business is about events. It's about those conferences. It's about creating insights. It's about creating engagement. We do research for our clients. And all this, of course, is a monetized. So
right.
In purely marketing terms, it's marketing, but monetized marketing. And I am fortunate enough to be leading the CSR activities of Dun & Bradstreet in India. It's something which, of course, is not related to marketing, but it's quite related to my heart. So it's close to my heart. It's something by which we can give back to society. And sometimes
True.
It's also a break from the, well, we are always chasing numbers. To do something which is good for the society is always a satisfying thing.
Amazing. So just wanted to ask more on the CSR bit. Which are the causes which you cater to or which you invest or engage into?
So there is we haven't not picked up any particular theme, but what we try to do is do our bit as much as possible.
Right.
So there are the usually the we support a lot on the education. That is one, because we believe that education is like a building block. When you support education of kids, of girl students, so you are creating a long-term social impact.
True.
So ultimately, especially with girl child, if you are educating them, you are educating the family. It results into benefits such as health, such as nutrition, far-reaching effects in
yes,
the social fabric
yes.
of the country. So we support education of underprivileged children. We focus a lot on health. We support treatment of cancer patients. And we also focus a lot on the environment, which includes planting trees. So that is something, ecological restoration is something which we feel is important. And unfortunately, our cities do not have that kind of flexibility for ecological restoration. Unfortunately, I can say we are past that. But there are still a lot of ecological basins, biodiversity basins in India, which need to be preserved. And In fact, interactions over the past 2 years of handling CSR in Dun & Bradstreet is that thankfully corporate organizations are very pro about it. It's not just utilizing their budgets, they don't do lip speak. They are doing a lot of work there. There are a lot of agencies which are selflessly working very hard for various causes and upliftment of society, making our lives better. And amazing, because you feel that you are part of that overall mission. It's not a job, it's not a checklist. I truly feel that we become part of a overall mission where everybody is really trying to do their bit to make this world a better place.
Yeah, that's quite interesting. You know, I didn't know this side of Dun & Bradstreet. Thanks for sharing that. And wanted to also delve upon the learning solutions bit, where you have these very interesting events. And I think these are across industries, if I'm not mistaken, right? You focus on certain areas where you have insights from those industries, and you get expert speakers during the event, right? So can you tell us more about those events as well?
Yes. So it's interesting that while all companies, whether they are like 180 year old companies like Dun & Bradstreet or the newest of startups, everybody has challenges. Everybody, even in the most mature sectors, are trying to find their way. And it's not easy, that because you need complete knowledge of a particular problem statement or of a new opportunity or any white space you are targeting, because you are taking a big decision. And what people always feel is that they need to take informed decisions. For taking informed decisions, you need that kind of knowledge, you need that kind of learning. And this is what we also decided decades ago that we would do. So we have a series of such knowledge platforms. For example, we focus on, say, particular domains. So we have conferences which have conversations for relevant to BFSI sector. There is something for MSME sector. It's something. There is something for PSU and government sector.
Yeah.
Or we pick up the new age themes. For example, ESG is a big.
Yes.
It's a big thing, and we recently had a conference around it. And there are also some which are particular to domains, like, for example, which are relevant for CFOs, relevant for CMOs, relevant for HR heads. And what we seek to do through these 10-12 platforms is that one, have these kind of conversations which pick up those trends. There's a lot of focus on content. There's a lot of focus on research that we do on what are the issues various organizations are facing, because we are a B2B company. We are interacting with so many clients, client organizations who are also looking at us to solve their problems. But all this is not just for our consumption. All this knowledge that we are creating is also for consumption of the overall, for industry as a whole. And that is where I feel that knowledge is a big differentiator when it comes to B2B and B2C. Here you need to create that kind of thought leadership through knowledge, and which is what these conferences do.
And you get industry experts, not just from the industry, but you also get subject knowledge experts from the government as well, if I'm not mistaken. That actually creates an interesting confluence. In fact, even from academics, you have people talking about these topics and giving their inputs, right?
Yes. In fact, the topics we pick up come from in the industry itself, because when we talk to our clients, they tell us about the challenges they are facing or the new trends which are coming. And what we do is we use these platforms to bring a more 360 degree discussion. So it's not a unidimensional thing that one stakeholder, the biggest stakeholder in that scenario, is only talking about it. So that's not knowledge creation. Knowledge comes when there are diverse views which are coming, and that
absolutely.
Is why we bring in academia, we bring in government officials, we bring in subject matter experts, we bring in the industry veterans, and we also bring in the greenhorns. So everybody's view comes together, and that is how we build it. And through this also, I must mention that we also try to recognize those who have made a difference. Therefore, we have something called India's Top 500 Value Creators. So these are the companies which have created value, actual value for stakeholders in the past 3-5 years. We try to identify the leading SMEs of India, the leading mid-sized corporates of India, the leading PSUs, and also the leading banking and financial services companies. So it also becomes a ready reckoner for industry experts, analysts, government agencies, generally corporates who are looking to identify the cream of Indian industry.
That's very interesting. Coming to your exposure or your experience per se, I think you have been into banking and financial services. How has marketing evolved over a period of time according to you?
So I started my career in 2006, and again, as I said, sometimes I'm not as old as Dun & Bradstreet, but in marketing terms, I think I'm pretty old that way. So in 2006, there was hardly any SMS marketing. There was no email marketing. Facebook was not there. There was no Twitter. So digital marketing as a whole was non-existent.
Yes.
So when I started, it was about the brand. Brand building, it was about PR, it was about creating those outreach. So we used to talk in terms of ATL BTL. So, and ATL BTL digital hadn't come then. So there was a lot of focus actually on sales, distribution, on improving the product, and communication used to typically, and I'm talking about banks here, of course. So, and communication used to come after that.
Right.
So if it used to be said that if your service is good, if you have a good branch network, if you have great products, which usually meant lower fees and better interest rates, your job is done. The rest, everything is to just communicate. But over a period of time, banks have matured a lot as far as marketing is concerned. They have realized, perhaps that is because of the competition they have been facing within themselves in the traditional banks, as we call it, but also competition from fintechs, which has actually changed the marketing game for banks. They have become more focused on what they communicate. They have become more focused on being up to date with the trends there. They have focused a lot on digital marketing. And now if you see, of course, every digital marketing or an ATL agency knows that BFSI sector is the biggest spender as far as marketing is concerned. And they spend not just purely on a big media plan. They really invest in the brand. So that is a big and a welcome change which I see. Of course, over a period of time, data became important. With big data came a new field, a subfield of marketing, as they said, analytics, where we used to have a separate team which analyzes all that customer data, and banks have that wealth of data.
Yeah.
And they analyze all that data and try to bring in trends. And then suddenly we had the marketing automation, which I believe totally changed the game. Social media and marketing automation, I feel, have been probably in a span of 4 or 5 years, which I was handling, and suddenly I realized that I am living in the stone age because I have not kept abreast with all that. And this is the mid 2010s where it really Google, Facebook upped their advertising game.
Yeah,
they went beyond being social network
right.
to become advertising platforms. But what fascinated me was that, and while I come from that old school of traditional marketing, as they call it, there was so much wealth of data, which I realized that even in banks, we had a lot of customer data, but we had that big unknown of non-customers or prospects. And here digital marketing platforms were giving us real-time data. They helped us in ad testing, which used to be like a long drawn process earlier.
Yes.
Ad testing became much quicker. SEO was something which again was totally very different from what we used to do earlier. So SEO was big, and ultimately Google became the biggest search platform. Subsequently, then we realized that there are other search platforms like YouTube which have come in. Video marketing became big, content marketing became big. So in the, I would say since 2014, in the past 10 years or so, there have been so many changes. It's that if I try to remember the Vipul of pre-2012-13.
The analog marketing era.
Analog marketing area, and I feel that person does not exist anymore. Now my thinking has changed a lot. While there is with digital marketing, there sometimes is a compromise on creativity, there is a compromise on brand building, there is an expectation of getting quick solutions, but that is something which every marketeer ultimately grows more mature and realizes that you while you can be a specialist as far as your expertise is concerned, your marketing plans cannot be one dimensional,
right.
Focusing only on digital, or for that matter focusing only say on
offline
ATL or offline,
right.
So I think banking sector as a whole also has developed that kind of omni-channel marketing, which I think is now part and parcel of every marketer's plan, be it any sector, B2B, B2C,
true,
anything.
True. In fact, very interesting to see banking, you know, transition from, you know, what it used to be very regulatory earlier, right? And they have now managed to, you know, bridge the gaps in terms of data security, and now they have ventured into, you know, as you rightly said, you know, into business analytics and targeted marketing in terms of, you know, which customers to target and all, makes it very interesting.
I think you mentioned about regulatory, and I think
yes.
It's something probably we don't realize, but what has also changed is the psyche of the marketer in financial services. Earlier, by nature, we were always taught to be more cautious about what we are saying there.
Yeah.
Bank marketers still are, but what they have also realized is that the new generation, even millennials or Gen Z, they prefer a more relaxed form of communication. They prefer a more vibrant form of communication. And sometimes I also see that change has come in possibly every bank's marketing communication, which hitherto was more formal. It was earlier more, as I said, cautious. And ultimately, every marketing communication used to sound the same.
Yes.
Only the you remove the logo sticker and change it and replace it with another. It many times seemed the same. But I've been fortunate enough to work with organizations like Axis Bank, Yes Bank, subsequently India Infoline, which were very vibrant as far as their marketing activities are concerned. They were open to open to change, open
they
to
were all the new
things.
Age
the new age
banks at yes. that time, and they, you know, took the industry by storm in terms of getting colors in their logos and whatnot.
Yes.
Yeah. And in fact, another thing I wanted to also ask was, you know, see, this was more the B2C marketing that you did, right? So how has it changed in terms of B2B marketing, which you are doing right now? So any insights or any inputs you would like to give on that?
In fact, a big change. I must say honestly that I also grappled with it for some time. While the principles of marketing do not change, ultimately a customer is a customer, and ultimately you have at least you have those 4 P's and 7 P's of marketing, they do not change. But again, how you have to change your approach quite a bit. So in B2C, we every time used to think about how is the trend, how is the psyche of or consumer behavior of a large segment.
Right.
We used to deal in large numbers there. And when it came to B2B, suddenly it's a lot about B2B and it's a lot about one-to-one marketing. In B2C, it was about, we used to call it segment marketing. In B2B, it's about account-based marketing. And now we have moved into contact-based marketing, how you are targeting that particular person. In B2C, typically the decision maker was one person.
Yeah.
And in many times that one person was a decision maker for the whole family, but their decisions were their own. So all our activities were also built around one message that person should imbibe, because that purchaser also used to be the user.
Right.
But when it came to B2B and in an information services industry, the user is someone very different from the influencer or even the final decision maker. And there is a whole engine in every organization which has to take this decision. You have to convince the customer multiple times, because at multiple levels for multiple use cases, therefore the whole gestation period is also much longer.
True.
So for me as a marketer, while I used to see my campaigns giving result in a week, they used to show results in 4 to 7 days. Then subsequently, I used to see the conversions happening in say 15 days or 20 days. Here, suddenly your campaign starts showing some kind of results in 15 or 20 days. So one needs a lot more patience.
True.
One needs to plan, therefore, several parallel activities at the same time, because you cannot afford to wait so much. I think that has been the biggest change, because that feedback that comes for your campaigns is much slower in B2B marketing.
Right, very true. And in fact, I would like to touch upon the new term that has been, you know, we keep hearing in marketing, and that is AI. So wanted to know your thoughts on, you know, about AI and how it can impact marketing.
Then I'll start again with when I started my career, it was your brain was the only intelligence you would apply. A lot of it, we used to get a lot of data through various research or analyzing True. Customer data, but a lot of it was intuitive. Our decision making was intuitive. And the more gray hair you had, the better you were at your intuition. Because you have seen that that whole cycle, you have seen which typically what works, what doesn't work. At the same time, earlier business cycles were much longer. Consumers, as they call generation, changed only after say 20 years or so, which subsequently became like 10 to 15 years in our time. True. But these days, even 3 years is not good enough. You cannot rely on your 3 year old information. You need to get new information. But at that point of time, everything was based on our own experience, which again resulted in, I would say, of course, expertise usually lies in very few. There can be only few experts. It's like a pyramid. Right. I think therefore marketing, the pace of marketing was slower, I would say. But over a period of the last 10 years, all that data, all that analysis, everything came into the hands of the marketeer who was running those campaigns. He or she did not have to rely on an external expert or an internal expert to do it. They got real-time information, they got segmented information, a wealth of data. But that also meant everything became became quick fix. That let's try it out, which is good as far as experiments is concerned. But the learning has now passed on. That intuition has been passed on from the marketeer to the platform. Now, of course, the world's best scientists these days are not solving world's problems. They are trying to make better ads, they have better algorithms there. So they are the ones actually taking the decisions. And sometimes I feel there is an over-reliance on the platforms and the output or the analysis they are presenting. But I think that's evolution. But when it comes to artificial intelligence, and here we mean that bit of decision making is also transferred. While I see artificial intelligence as a great tool to kind of analyze all that big data, to make decisions faster, to give you a good starting point, I don't think so it can be the be all and end all as far as marketing is concerned. Because it's still, marketing is a science when learned, but it is an art when it is practiced. There are several options, there are several routes for you, and you need to take that decision.
Right.
And that is the skill of the marketeer. So I hope the young marketeers do not fall into the trap of hoping that AI will do everything. AI is something which all of us need to understand better. Currently, the AI which we use is still very, I would say, basic. Of course, in 2022, ChatGPT changed the whole game because it made AI a toy in everyone's hands. Suddenly, everybody felt that they could write one line and they could get answers to everything. So that oracle, it was made like an oracle, and it's probably not that easy. There is still a lot of grudge work that needs to be done. And with AI, therefore, if one sees this as an enabler, as a tool, then it's a great weapon.
Yes, absolutely. I think we are still grappling in terms of what we can make out of AI, and there is a lot of opportunity there as well. Thanks for those inputs. So Vipul, you talked about digital marketing, you know, which is obviously now the focus of almost all the marketeers, and if not, you know, then they need not be called as CMOs, so to say, today. So what are the initiatives that, you know, are being taken in that space at Dun & Bradstreet?
One thing, in fact, as you mentioned, that digital marketing is being done by all CMOs, and it's like a 10-15 year old industry by now. And so do we really call it digital marketing now? It's as good as a traditional marketing because it's so much of a part and parcel.
True.
And in fact, some organizations focus purely on what is typically digital marketing, and they don't do traditional marketing as well. But coming to us, while in fact we have been present for like 180 years, we have been present in India for 30 years. Marketing and D&B has evolved very quickly. For us, digital marketing is now at our core. And earlier I was mentioning about how we need to create that kind of thought leadership. What we need to do is provide the right kind of information in clear terms to our prospects, and therefore a website becomes the cornerstone of everything. For us, driving traffic to our website is one of the primary objectives, and within that, driving organic traffic is actually the primary objective. Of course, we do use paid search for a certain campaigns.
Right.
Or for promoting any new product, because SEO takes quite some time to actually take effect. But what I'm stressing on is that we want to be known as someone which is providing insights, someone which is providing knowledge, and therefore our website is actually based on this philosophy only. So right from talking about not our products, but what the end user would be. For example, they could be a chief marketing officer, they could be a chief financial officer or a CIO, and we therefore have checkposts which guide them properly. You could be from a particular sector, say an IT sector or a BFSI sector or pharma sector, etc. Again, we have checkposts. So mm-hmm. for me, my website first is like a checkpost to guide you to the right place, to the right destination, and subsequently there is a lot of conversion rate optimization that is done through one, having proper content, having proper prompts, ensuring that there are enough nudges to ensure that the website itself generates a lot of leads and becomes a lead generation engine in itself. So that's on the website front. Second part on digital marketing is on social media. And our focus therefore is, I mentioned, was on creating that thought leadership on LinkedIn. Now LinkedIn is the right B2B platform. That is where these days the who's who of the corporate world are there, and we have to be there where our customers are. And we need to be seen in the right light. Therefore, that thought leadership is important. Therefore, we need to put out more engaging content. We need to constantly keep reviewing our content strategy every quarterly, and that's what we do. And what it has resulted in is that we have engagement rates as high as 14%, while the industry standard hovers between 1 to 3%. So for a for a brand which is putting out pure content, pure knowledge content, it's not the fun stuff there, and still getting those engagements also speaks volume of the kind of appetite that the end consumer has, that our customers have, that they are seeking that kind of content which is knowledge, which is insights. So social media is second. Third is performance marketing, and while we do not invest very heavily on performance marketing because our philosophy is organic first, but nonetheless, performance marketing also has added benefits of creating awareness. Performance marketing also has advantage of giving us quicker analysis of what messaging is working with which segment, say which location. So all that, when you need to build cohorts and you need to test out what your product proposition is, I think then paid marketing is the best way to go about it. Another big thing is which we are about to launch is on WhatsApp. Now, Dun & Bradstreet is focusing a lot on the SME segment, developing the SME segment. We are focusing on not just the tier 1 cities, but also the tier 2, tier 3 cities. And there are anything between 95 million, somewhere around 95 million MSMEs. Nobody knows the actual number.
Right.
But if you think about even half of it, if it's true, so that's a huge base to tap. And MSMEs in the past 15-20 years have evolved a lot. They not only invest in technology, they invest in new age solutions, they have bigger dreams than before, and they are very open to newer revenues. So
right.
Dun & Bradstreet also is focusing a lot on providing them various solutions on data and analytics. And at the same time, it's very difficult to reach to MSMEs. So therefore we are going to launch our own WhatsApp business channel. We decided that is an excellent way to go. because WhatsApp is these days perhaps like we used to use telephones normally, but
True.
Is the primary form of communication, and WhatsApp also allows is conversations to happen, unlike an SMS or email marketing, which is what I personally call more like a one-shot marketing. You're spraying and then you have to just wait for the responses. But with WhatsApp, you can do those conversations,
right,
which are more fruitful, more engaging. So that is another big thing for us. And of course, when we are talking about identifying the right kind of audience, we have the database. So we are a data company. What people generally look out for companies like Dun & Bradstreet to help them with the intelligent prospecting, Dun & Bradstreet already has it. So
right,
we have that kind of in-house advantage there.
That's interesting. In fact, MSMEs is something which is untapped, and it's quite exciting now in these times, especially when the sector is growing and is actually showing a lot of potential of growth. Wanted to delve more upon that in terms of what can be the product proposition from Dun & Bradstreet to MSMEs, because the requirements will be very different as compared to your current clients.
So MSMEs are typically they do not produce end products. So MSMEs form a large part of the value chain,
right?
And that's usually not as customers but as suppliers or vendors. Most of them are, for example, ancillary industries, as we call it. Therefore, they need to sell themselves into another company. Okay, they need to present their credibility. Dun & Bradstreet, because we have all this data on every company, what we build is we prepare credibility reports,
right?
And we have our own proprietary DNB rating,
right,
which we give to any kind of company, whether large or small. So what happens is that we take all that publicly available information we do an analysis and do a rating analysis. So that's more on the reputation, what are the kind of financials over a period of time, how strong they are, overall probes that are happening, and then the rating is provided. Now this rating is actually very well respected in the industry. Banks, financial institutions, corporates, they use this rating to assess the quality of the applicant in this case. So what MSMEs seek from us is we have these credibility reports, which they then utilize to present themselves better to not just companies in India, but globally as well.
Interesting. Now coming to your illustrious career, and I know you would have a lot of moments which stand out as I would say highlights of achievements. So if you can probably share with us some of these highlights, some of these peaks of your career, and what were the learnings from that?
One peak of my career, I would say, is it's all about new experiences, and I think peak of a career is not when you do the same thing in a brilliant way, but you do a totally different thing. You falter, you make mistakes, you try out new things, you discover new things, and probably that is where the real joy comes from. So marketing probably, at least for me, is a very emotional thing as well. So one cannot be just a checklist or a numbers guy there. So one of my previous stints, my organization was a partner with the Indian Premier League. So that was totally new for me, and being associated with IPL is the biggest property a
right.
marketer can associate with. When we are investing so much in this partnership, of course, the onus also fell on the marketing team to generate ROI in various ways. There is also business generation, but it's also about improving the awareness and salience levels. And I would say it was a peak as far as learning was concerned. While, of course, there was a larger marketing team involved and everybody was racking their brains on how to exploit this opportunity and improve our awareness and salience, the whole thing was about that collaboration, where
right.
I interacted with several people within the organization, outside the organization, new ideas coming in, and we were associated with this property for about 5 years. And how many new things that you try, I think that is something which is still memorable for me. Second also is another, I would say, peak where I would say made a difference is also in one of my previous organizations, where if I have to put it in one phrase, I drastically reduced the unknown. So many times marketers grapple with the problem that if they are getting any, say, leads, they don't know where it is coming from. They don't know which channel is performing better. They don't know which geographies are performing better. For them, that lead base is more like a monolith, which they are not able to analyze. My first year in the organization was about reducing that unknown, almost becoming fanatic with how we track leads and monitor leads, building all those systems with missed call numbers and campaign codes and record keeping, etc., which helped us understand our campaigns better, which helped us understand what is working, not working, take corrective action. While I'm not counting this, of course, as a campaign, which is an output, right. But sometimes, like Mahendra Singh Dhoni would say, the process is important.
Absolutely.
And sometimes when you create those processes, it creates a difference for years to come and over multiple campaigns.
The results follow. True.
And if I have to pick up certain campaigns, in fact, the third one was when in India Infoline, we hired our first ever brand ambassador. So that Rohit Sharma. So Rohit Sharma, that was around 2020. First of all, there was a decision of whether to go with a brand ambassador. So we wanted to create that kind of leadership. We were analyzing our competition, which as far as marketing and branding awareness terms was moving ahead from us. And taking him on board, then working out overall positioning for IFL, Seedhi Baat was the name of the campaign, and working with the best minds on how they develop that kind of communication. And ultimately, we moved into brand TVCs, and we moved into product TVCs, and subsequently, the whole association and positioning percolated to all forms, right from say a branch branding or our product communication and social media marketing. And when I look back and see all those activities which we did, and ultimately, which really created that strong positioning of honest, direct, no hanky-panky there as far as our products are concerned, that Seedhi Baat proposition, that is what was really satisfying. It really moved the needle for the organization.
Yeah.
It translated into business terms as well. And I think I should mention that we are marketers. Sometimes we get swayed away by creativity, but we are not artists. Ultimately, we are supposed to generate certain outcomes, which I mentioned earlier, and demand generation, business generation is ultimately one of the primary objectives. Ultimately, it should lead to that. For me, if your overall marketing activities are not resulting in a delta in business, your whole creativity or your joy doesn't mean at all.
Absolutely, that falls flat. Very true. I think association with Rohit Sharma was probably as clean and as straight as his cricket shots.
Yes,
interesting. Finally, one more thing, Vipul, you have been a marketer, you are a seasoned marketer. So wanted to, ask you if you can, share some takeaways for budding marketers.
I think it all starts with learning. And an advice I give to all marketers is to learn, read as much as possible, not from AI, but do your own research, talk to others, and the more information you try to grasp, the better it will be for you, because it's not marketing is not an easy job, because it's something which is subject to a lot of variables. And the more you learn, the more you understand these variables, the better you would be as a marketeer. Second also is that I personally feel that if you have to ultimately grow as a good, or even if you want to become a great marketeer, you need to be jack of all trades. At least you need to know very well all functions, all domains of marketing. So it's not just branding or research, you are done. Or you are a PR person, or you are an events person, or you are a digital marketer. That's not enough. You need to understand everything, all those. But of course, you should be master of one. Make one your big Brahmastra, which you can always use ultimately.
So jack of all, master of one. Interesting.
Third is understand the business strategy. As I mentioned, we are not artists, we are ultimately employees of a company. We are hired for a particular purpose, and that ultimate purpose is growth, is revenue. How we go about it can be different for different marketeers and different organizations, but understand the business strategy. Otherwise, most of your campaigns will either be rejected on proposal stage because they would be very tangential to what the business strategy is, or they would not get the desired results. So that is there. And fourth is that be ethical, be humble. There are lot more things to be learned. The world is vast. Nobody can become an expert with even like 20, 30 years of experience. And as I learned over a period of time, when till about first 5-6 years, whatever I learned was overturned when digital marketing came. And I know that as of today, whatever I've learned in the past 15 years or so will have no use if I'm not abreast with AI. So the world keeps changing. We are not the center of the universe. So we have to keep pace with the universe.
Very rightly said. And coming from a seasoned marketeer like you, you know, it actually reminds me of a quote that, you know, you need to know a lot to know that you need to know a lot.
Yes,
so that
yes,
comes only after you have certain amount of learning that, you know, there is still a lot to learn. And that is how you, that humility comes that humility, along with that.
In fact, that is humility will ultimately lead to excellence. Otherwise, you would always fall short. But I would also say for all marketeers, be ready to also take those big shots. Try whatever you try to do, try to be awesome at it, and don't fear failure, because again, with marketing, you never know what will click and what will not click. But you are, boats are not made for being parked on the shore. Ultimately, you have to venture out into the seas and be brave enough to even suck at something new.
Play your shots from the front foot, like
front foot,
Rohit.
Yes.
Thanks a lot, Vipul, for these insights and this wonderful chat on the Growth Genius. As I said, always a pleasure to interact with you online or offline. It's always a learning for us. Thank you so much.
Always a pleasure for me also, Mayur.
Great. Ladies and gentlemen, this was Growth Genius Vipul Oberoi, Director, Marketing, CSR and Learning Solutions at Dun & Bradstreet. I hope you liked this chat with him, wherein he has discussed about how Dun & Bradstreet is working on digital marketing, on exploring SME sector, and also doing business on WhatsApp. I had a great time chatting with Vipul, and I hope you like our content of The Growth Genius. So subscribe, like, and share content of The Growth Genius, where we discuss and bring to you growth stories in marketing and business, powered by Infidigit, the SEO experts. All our social media handles are mentioned below. And you can also listen to these growth stories on audio platforms. Again, the link of all of them are mentioned in the descriptor. So till the next episode of The Growth Genius, take care and thank you very much.